Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, this is our 2017 FA Cup Final Special.
I know, it's another special. After another you just special. Explained our last special,
which was the spring special.
Spring special. This is the FA Cup special. So soon to be followed by the movie preview special.
Yes, but this is sort of...
You know, when it's all special, is anything special?
It's all special. But I'm going to... And again, I think I need to be right up front here. This is a... We did a bit of soccer on the last show. We're going to do a bit more soccer on this show. But as always, we're going to talk about and around the game rather than talk about the game itself. But the FA Cup is a... is the world's oldest knockout soccer tournament. It's about 140 years old. I will explain in a few moments more about the tournament. But this year, the final being played at the end of the month at London's Wembley Stadium is between your team,
Chelsea,
and my team, the Arsenal Football Club. Mm-hmm. We're in the FA Cup final against each other in one of the showpiece European soccer events. And maybe more than that, global soccer events, because across the world, far-flung countries in the world all tune in for the FA Cup final every year. And I will talk about that.
What time is it local time?
It moved. When I was a kid, it was on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now it's been moved to 5:15 or 5:30, which here in the US is 12 noon.
Yeah.
So it's perfect. You can eat breakfast and then begin your noonday drinking with a sports event on. So
will we be getting together to watch this game together?
Yeah, we might do, yeah. We can do that.
I think I'm around.
Yeah, then we should do that. But this is our special. And one of the reasons, when I was a kid, the FA Cup final was the only live soccer match that was ever on TV. And I know that's weird. You know, now we are constantly, but we can't get away from live sports events. And we are going to talk shortly about ESPN. Who have laid off a whole load of personnel, and I'm sure we'll have a discussion about some of the reasons. There's so much live sports on TV. I think it can be hard. I think for people who are not of indeterminate middle age, it's actually hard to think of a time when sports actually wasn't live, and all you got were highlights and clips and all this type of thing. Anyway, the FA Cup final when I was a kid was the only soccer match in the whole year that was shown in its entirety live. And because it was a big deal, the whole Saturday leading up to the FA Cup final at 3 o'clock local time, all the TV stations ran plenty of specials. So there would be I'm trying to think of different shows on...
Well, specials like specials about the game or just, you know, special episode of Monty Python, yes, the game theme.
I think that's the better way to put it. There were one or two specials about... From about noon, like close to kickoff, you actually got the sports people came on and they did all the regular build-up and... Mm-hmm. Pre-game show, like, for example, it was always a big deal, you know, back on when the teams used to travel by bus, like their own charter bus.
They would cut in for the bus arrival?
Well, no, what they would do was they would put a coach on the bus, and it was always a big deal, like at 1:15, tune in to see the teams on the buses. And so they would have a camera crew riding along with the team as it approached Wembley Stadium where the final was. But prior to 12 o'clock... You're all kinds of, like, as you just said, like a Monty Python show that had an FA Cup final theme. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I'm trying to think of a modern TV show that people watch. There would be an episode of Grey's Anatomy with the usual thing, people having affairs, patients dying. But in the background, someone would be trying to swap Cup final tickets. Yeah, right. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a special FA Cup final edition of Grey's Anatomy. Uh-huh. So in the spirit of that, we're doing a... Atlantic Voice Podcast FA Cup Final Edition.
So there'll be like thematic elements of the cup related to this.
Yes. You're a bit surprised that we're going to do a whole load of regular topics, but I'm going to tie them in to the FA Cup and the FA Cup Final. But I think maybe it's...
We need to talk more about the cup first, don't we?
Yeah, I pulled a whole load of stuff from Wikipedia, and I think it's best maybe to set up how the FA Cup is different from most American sports leagues. And would you like to run with that?
Well, so I, you know what I know about
it. And I'm getting very hot right now because we're both wearing our shirts, but I've doubled down. I have a T-shirt under my Arsenal shirt, so I'm very hot. So
very
while you talk...
Very much like a close friend of ours with his T-shirts under everything.
Well, yes, that's right. Well, can you explain how how American sports roll and then how European soccer sports are slightly different while I take off my undershirt.
Your undershirt. So we're going to go two steps here.
Yeah.
The headphones are coming off.
Yeah.
What I know about it is that you start, you have a league, you know, and let's start with the American sports.
We'll start with American
sports. And we're venturing dangerously close to the suggested topic your mom has been giving us about comparing sports in England and here. But, you know, normally here in all the leagues, you have a regular season establishes who's got the best regular season record. You move on, and then at the end of the year, you have a playoff with a knockout type of format. Even NCAA tournament, although you don't have an overall ranking, and it's a much bigger playoff, so to speak. It is sort of this two-step system,
yeah.
and just have one winner at the end is the one who wins that final competition. Whereas in England and in most of the European nations, I think.
Yeah, all the European nations.
You basically have overlapping competitions. You have the league play, which you have your normal set of games, two games against each team. At the end of the year, somebody is champion, the leader of the league. Meanwhile, at the same time, not afterwards, but at the same time, you have these knockout competitions, and the FA Cup is one, and the other one is the Open Cup, but I mean, what's the right word for it?
The one in England is called the League Cup, which is just the professional teams. In Spain, it's called the Copa del Rey, I think. In Germany, I can't remember what it's called. And it is interesting. In Europe, the European leagues, the teams have a slightly more American attitude to their cup competitions, meaning it is all about the league.
Right.
Whereas in England, the cup, because the FA Cup, which is 145 years old, and because it is a massive tournament
I should mention, by the way, it's you mentioned the League Cup being open to pro teams. The FA Cup is really an open.
It's open,
and I will get in there.
Yeah, I can explain who
they don't all. You don't all start with the same number of games, but
I will explain who's eligible for that shortly. But yeah, the FA Cup, as you said, runs concurrently, but in England, it's still less so now, thanks to things like the Champions League. It still has a glory of its own, whereas I think it's fair. If you're in Spain, winning the Spanish Cup, if you're a manager on the hot seat, that's probably not going to save your job, especially if you finished 14th in the league, because the league is less who you are type thing.
Yeah. Although I was going to ask you about the prominence. So it sounds like historically, the cup has been relatively more prominent. I would from my distance, it seems to be less pronounced now. I mean,
the two teams
in the semifinals were basically resting players.
Yeah.
And I think that probably has a lot to do with getting into the Champions League and it became much more important to win your league or at least be in top four in your league because of the riches it gave to you in the Champions League the following year, meaning the European Champions League.
Right.
Whereas this doesn't have that kind of payoff.
You have to play in
the Community Shield at the beginning of next year.
So the FA Cup has definitely lost some of its luster. In terms of that, for the very best teams, but I think for all the other teams,
Very exciting early on.
So I've pulled, as our tradition, the Wikipedia page for the FA Cup, and I'm going to try and sort of every year about 700 different teams enter the FA Cup. Now, again, in American sports leagues where there are 30 franchises, the number 700 is actually quite mind-boggling. But let me sort of give you a sense of what that means. So you have all your professional teams, which in England is technically about 90 teams that are actually
in various divisions, essentially.
In the Premier League, which would be the equivalent of the NFL, the NBA, there are 20. But the professional teams are teams where all the players, that's their job.
Right.
Then you have the semi-pro leagues, where players tend to have other jobs, but they're still training three nights a week and earning some sort of a paycheck for kicking the ball around. Basically, anyone, I think the rule for the FA Cup is any team that is classified as fully professional or semi-professional has the right to enter.
They just can get in if they ask.
You have to. There's some minimum standard. If you can imagine all the semi-professional teams are in a massive pyramid league with, all the way down to the bottom, there is a certain cutoff. But basically, in September, the first 400 teams all go in a hat. Their names are pulled out, and they start playing knockout games. And it's very important there when I said all the names go in a hat. Every time a round is completed, all the survivors' names
gets redrawn,
unlike, say, the NCAA tournament. Like in
brackets where you could tell where everybody's going to end up.
Right. So there's no seeding. So what happens is all the semi-pro teams spend about six rounds knocking each other out until there's about 20 of them left. And then slowly you get to what's called the first. I think there are like five rounds of all the semi-pro teams, mm-hmm. and it's all called qualifying.
Are there any full amateurs?
No. I think that's now the delineation, that you have some form of a stadium that might hold, you know, like a high school stadium. And right. I've seen,
like, because they show some of those games, and you see some of them, and you go, wow, that's just basically a bleacher. Like,
that's what it is. Yeah. But, I mean, again, that's it. I mean, and I think I guess the nearest thing I could equate it to was if you have Major League Baseball, and then you have AAA and AA and A, well, all the A teams would play each other. Or would be drawn against for one game, mm-hmm. and then the survivors would go against the AA, and then the AAA, and then the big boys would show up. So at some moment,
right.
you know, depending, a team from the lowest level of baseball minor leagues could end up playing the Yankees in a, you know, second round game.
Was it Arsenal that played the team with the goalkeeper who ate the sandwiches?
Yes.
Like he was a backup goalkeeper. I mean, he looked like he weighed about 300 pounds. Yeah. And his big claim to fame, there's a bunch of pictures of him eating sandwiches.
Eating a pie, actually. Yeah. So anyway, the FA Cup has about five rounds where all the amateurs sort of knock each other. They whittle themselves down. And again, it's one game. And if you lose, you're out. There's no like, oh, come back. No, you keep advancing. And then you get...
So when they have... when it's tied at the end, or they just play extra time. There's no replays or second games.
No, in the earlier rounds, there were replays.
Okay.
Then you get to the first round proper, which is the first time that the proper professional teams show up.
Which, by the way, that means they draw. When they draw, they also draw home and away. And, you know, even if you're Arsenal or Chelsea, if you draw, you can end up going to the other team's venue. Yes. Or you could end up at home. A lot of times they mention that on a replay, or not, like if you go to the small team, Arsenal's playing the guy with the sandwich and everything.
Yeah.
They go to the away to play there. It's actually not bad if they don't, like, you know, because you get to come back and you get a bunch of, you get, and a get slice a bunch of the money. Revenue from the game. Yeah. So getting into a big stadium isn't too bad for a small team because it just picks up a bunch of money from that.
So anyway, you get to the stage, you get to something called the third round proper, which now means and the third round proper is basically, you know, the 20 survivors
everybody's in.
Yeah. The third round proper, you have sort of your 25 odd survivors from the lower pro leagues and any semi-pro team that has survived that far. And then at that moment, the big teams like Arsenal and Chelsea and Manchester United, they all go in the hat. Mm-hmm. And then from that moment on, you have 64 teams and it goes 64, 32, 16, just like the NCAA tournament. But again, as you pointed out, every round is redrawn. So there's no seeding, and so
I mean, you often find, you know, it's like you know, they used to say about the NBA draft was like fixed because they said, oh, you know, I think it was Patrick Ewing where they'd like, they refrigerated one of the ping pong balls so somebody could pick it out. There's a lot of times when the draws seem a little fixed, and in the fact that they match up, like big teams.
No, but they're not fixed. That's the wonderful thing. And again, they literally put ping pong balls or little balls.
There's a study somewhere that explains that is actually not random. Now, it's not going to, like, the ping pong balls know the difference about being big teams or small teams.
Okay.
But apparently, ping pong balls rolling around a thing are not nearly as random as they...
Oh, so you actually physically have to dig down to the bottom. If something's like at the bottom, it'll stay at the bottom?
Yeah, like, okay, they're inconsistent in how they mix.
So anyway, you get to the stage where everyone's in it. It's a 64-team tournament. And again, it's spread out through the season, so every couple of weeks. And again, your league position has nothing to do with you know, whether you get an advantage or anything. And so it is a completely independent tournament that runs concurrently with your regular season, which I know is very different from American sports, where the knockout aspect always comes at the end of the year, and it's the way to determine the champion. And when I was a kid, the FA Cup was kind of exciting.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the thing about the live games and not live games. So why would they not have any other live games at all?
Because when I was a kid, when in the 60s and the 70s and the early 80s, there was a belief by the football clubs that if you put football on TV, people wouldn't go to the game.
Yeah.
And this was before TV rights fees were so high. Right. So they really... the team survived on, as you talked about, a little team playing a big team. They want the revenue. That was how the big team survived.
Yeah.
So they didn't want live games.
Guess you didn't really have local team. I compare it to the U.S. where maybe just because of geography, right? Like radio, TV signals broadcast, not cable, right. Obviously would not go that far. And so most teams would have and still do have, well, not in the NFL, but most, baseball, and they have their own local, now they have their own local networks, but they used to have their own local network affiliation, you know, so the games would be on Channel 9 if it was in New York kind of thing. And I guess that didn't really exist in England because you didn't have that regional.
You didn't have regional. And so here's the other interesting thing about the FA Cup. It would obviously, you play it down to the final. The final was the very last game of the year. So just by the fact that
even though it's overlapping and it's the same as now, is the regular league will be over and then then this final, like they're doing all the games up in, obviously they were up to the final now, but there's still four more rounds of the Premier League, and then this last game will happen after that.
And so when you were a kid, I think because of the fact that it was the last game of the season. And I want everyone out to think about whether it's the NCAA tournament or the end of the NFL playoffs. Yeah. The biggest game is the last game. But in a strange way, the FA Cup, it was the biggest game, but it wasn't always the two best teams. Yeah, and even this year, and while it's true, in a couple of weeks, Chelsea might have won the Premier League, in reality, Arsenal have finished sixth and we're miles off the pace.
Yeah.
And yet we are playing in the final game of the season. Right. So the FA Cup did have this sort of Super Bowl-like hold over the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, when you were a kid, obviously, you know, as you get older, you suddenly realize, getting to the FA Cup is actually easier than winning the league. When you're a kid, and even now, there is still this sense of it's the final game.
Yeah.
And so it is a big deal. I want to share.
It's very weird because it does seem like the teams show up there, but, you know, just look at the number of teams you had to get through. Now, granted, the big teams enter at third round proper, but it does feel like
six rounds.
You ran a gauntlet of just winning a bunch of games. I mean, you won a bunch of games in a row. It's hard to do that.
Yeah.
You know, only two teams get through that all.
I mean, it's true. No one ever criticizes whoever the eventual NCAA champion is. If it's not a number one seed, no one ever tries to make the case that if you were an eight seed and you won it, that somehow you didn't deserve to be national champion. And yet, in reality, the reality is, you could have got... Well, although that's a seeded competition, so it is different.
Yeah.
Whereas in the FA Cup, because every round is redrawn, the luck of the draw may have had you have had play every game at home or every game against someone worse than you. And and so, anyway, as a competition, it's sort of a respite from the regular season, especially if your regular season is not going well. And like I say, the FA Cup was the finish, and it was...
You want to talk about the venue?
And it's always played at the same venue, which is England's National Stadium, Wembley Stadium, which I know we're going to talk about later, which we've been to, which is it's in North London. It is a massive, it's been redone since I was a kid. So it was completely torn down, and they actually played it in Wales for 4 years while they built the new National Stadium.
Because the new Wembley is like literally right on the same, it wasn't one of those ones where
it's right on the same spot. They knocked the old one down and built it right on the new one.
I showed you the Twitter feed. There's a Twitter feed for this person who puts out tons and tons of historical pictures.
Yeah, I follow that. Yeah,
and
it's old. Old London.
When the last round finished,
we will tweet Old London.
When the last round finished, they had a series of Wembley, you know, old pictures of Wembley when it was first being constructed, then when it was being changed over, and all these things because they were just, you know, they look at what events are going on, and they
it's always played in the same stadium, which no other team plays in.
You know, the semifinals were as well. Has that always been the case?
When I was a kid, the semifinals used to go to a neutral venue. And it's been quite controversial now that it goes to Wembley because it diminishes the notion of going to Wembley. Meaning by that was reaching Wembley, the big stadium in the capital of England. And if you cast your mind back 50 years when the world was a very different place, if you lived in the hinterlands, reaching the final meant as a fan, I'm getting a trip up to London and I'm going to the National Stadium.
Yeah.
And it was an event. Now they play the semifinals at Wembley, which sort of take away a little bit. It's a bit like, I don't know, this is probably a poor example. It's a bit like, you know, you're playing in the Masters, which is at Augusta every year, but the first two rounds they have it down the street and you only actually go do Amen Corner if you're in the top four at the end type thing.
Yeah.
So Wembley as a destination is sort of part of English soccer heritage. The FA Cup is Wembley. Wembley is the FA Cup. I mean, true, England played there, England won the World Cup there, But if you go up to the average fan on the street and go Wembley, he's thinking FA Cup final, my team are going. And it's a big day out and all this sort of thing. And so, yeah. So anyway,
we went there. It was not convenient to go to.
No. And we'll circle back to talking about Wembley a bit later. So anyway, this is our FA Cup final special to celebrate the fact that Chelsea and Arsenal are in the final against each other. We did play, you know, 15 years ago. And we beat you 2-0.
Yeah.
At the start of John Terry's career. But we're playing again.
That's right.
Yes.
You have any projection for this one?
No, I don't. But I will say, because I remember that because I'm an Arsenal fan. But here's the interesting thing. When you're a kid, and this is where soccer, I think, is different from higher scoring sports. The FA Cup has this place in your memory. Like you can sit six English guys sure. of indeterminate middle age around in the pub, and you can say who scored the winning goal in the 1981 FA Cup final, and there's a pretty good chance people can.
If you only saw one live game a year,
well, that was, so it is imprinted on your mind. So I'm going to tell you something. In 1978, it was the first FA Cup final that I remember Arsenal reaching. So I was still a tyke of a lad, and I watched it on TV, and Arsenal lost 1-0. And it's the first time I cried after a sporting event because it felt like the end of the world. We'd finished third that season, but it didn't matter. We'd lost the FA Cup final in the only live game on TV.
Who did?
Ipswich Town. The goal scorer was Roger Osborne, and he scored in the 78th minute.
Ipswich Town is like a... Certainly not
their league. Championship now. They have been in the Premier League on and off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can name FA Cup goal scorers of the final from, like, you know, 1972 onwards, or I can say to you, yes, that's the memorable thing. It's this weird sort of, you know, and again, it's the only live game. Everyone sits down in front of the telly. People who don't normally watch football watch the FA Cup final. Do you know what I mean? It draws
brings
in
everyone together because they have big ads. It's a big deal. Of course, they don't have the ads like in the Super Bowl. You got so many breaks that, like, you're always waiting for the first ad. Well, in watching soccer, you only have the halftime ads. You don't have these like break-ins during the thing. So maybe not as much of a sales.
So anyway,
I did also want to mention, you know, in the Men in Blazers podcast, one guy's a Chelsea fan, the other guy's a Everton fan, and so whenever they play each other, like the teams play each other, they call it El Blazerico, like El Clasico in Spain between Madrid and Barcelona. And so I didn't know if we needed a name, you know, for matches between Chelsea and Arsenal.
We can't really do the same.
It can't be like El Atlantico. That's too copied-ish. So it's like, because of this, we can call it the Atlantic Cup.
Which one? So one of them's an Everton fan?
Yeah.
Because the last time Everton won the FA Cup was in 1995.
No, because they don't do it with the cup. It's just the regular games. Just like, El Clasico is just...
Yeah, but I'm just throwing you out that, you know, that's why Everton won the cup in 95.
There you go.
And I can't remember, I think they played Manchester United. Like, it's not even... They didn't even play Arsenal. I mean, again, every year I watch the FA Cup final.
I have the worst memory for any of that stuff anyway.
Oh, like, no, I'm a super geek about all of that.
Like,
if
you were into baseball, you would, like, remember everybody's batting averages and things like that. And I'm just... It's not the way my brain works. And that's why I wasn't ever good with history class, because that required memorizing a bunch of dates and things like that. I need to have like a logical place to put a fact in order for it to resonate.
You know what you are? You're an emotional fan.
Yeah,
it's all about the emotion experience. But for me, it's also a way to prove my knowledge. So I'm actually competing in regular life against other fans. Like, oh, so you don't know who won the 1994 FA Cup final?
Yeah.
I think that was Manchester United 4, Chelsea 0, if I think correctly. Anyway, so there you go. So anyway, this is our FA Cup final special. We're now going to roll on with some general topics. But because it's an FA Cup final special, I will explain how all our topics are relevant. And the first one is easy.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about ESPN. So why don't I do the FA Cup final link for ESPN?
Okay.
The FA Cup final, when I was a kid, we only had three TV stations, the BBC, and the BBC had two channels, and then the independent station had one channel. The FA Cup final was always shown on both channels, and you had to make a decision, what channel was I going to watch the game on? Which commentator? That's why they used to do hours.
What was the difference? Just...
The pictures were exactly the same. The commentators were different.
Well, but other than being different commentators, was there like a different tone to their commentary?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just take up this.
But that's a whole, but that was one of
it's
the
like
reasons.
The full why, commentator employee act.
This was one of the reasons why both channels did like 6 hours of pregame programming to draw you in. And remember, this is before remote control, so there was a pretty good chance
you had to get up and change the channel.
Yeah, once you'd got the picture with
you're
your aerial,
committed to
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Once you'd fiddled with the aerial, so the picture was clear, you were leaving it on that channel for the rest of the day.
Nice.
So anyway, both stations used to show the game, and used to have to decide. About 5-6 years ago, about 20 years ago, it got to the stage, you know, due to rights fees, where only one channel ended up having it. But for the last 10 years, one of the pay channels has always had the rights to it. So it is on regular over-the-air TV or your local pay channel in England, Sky. In here, it would be ESPN or whoever. Right. You can watch it on that channel if you wish. I mentioned ESPN.
What is it on? It's on...
Here it's on Fox.
It's on
Here it's going to be on regular over the air Fox.
They have the cup games.
Yep,
I guess that's
they
right.
They have the final over the air Fox.
Well, I wasn't even sure that they had the. That
would be you, not I.
That's kind of weird.
So it's on regular over the air Fox here, but anyway, ESPN for a couple of years had the pay cable rights in the United Kingdom, or ESPN UK had the rights to cover the FA Cup, and their FA Cup final coverage was fronted by Rebecca Lowe, who now works for NBC here in America, and covers. She's sort of the anchor woman.
She did a good amount of Olympic coverage too.
Yeah, and she does Olympic coverage for American TV as
she's
well.
She's pretty good.
She's very good. Yeah. So anyway, ESPN. She used to work for ESPN, and of course, ESPN this week have been laying off staff.
Yeah. So what happened this week? The news was, or I guess a week and a half ago now, is they laid off a bunch of staff. Now, what's interesting is, like, their overall staff, I think the estimates I saw were there's like 4,000 or so people who work in Bristol, 8,000 like globally that work for them doing all kinds of work. They laid off like 100 people, which obviously is a drop in the bucket, but it's almost all frontline announcers, broadcasters, or writers,
which was very interesting
for the article. I mean, for writers for the website. You know what websites are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Our podcast is on a website.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, even though
we had
just
that debate last episode about websites.
Yeah, it was interesting.
So, you know, there's a number of articles that come out and talked about what does this mean? Are they falling apart? Kind of thing. And
no.
Well, that's the thing is they make tons of money still. Like, so Kevin Draper writes for Deadspin, and he seems to be every time you pull up an article and he gets ESPN, he talks about it, and he talks about the fact that this stuff is still making a killing. And there was an article at the end of last year talking about how they were, in the words of the headline, hemorrhaging subscribers. So, you know, there's definitely a huge diminishment of drop-off. And so, like, in 1 month, they lost something like 100. I forget what the number. Let's see if I can find them here. But there has been over 3 years something like a 10% drop in people who get ESPN.
Sure. But I want to say something now. That seems like a big deal, but I have a funny feeling that 10% drop-off is actually reflected across cable,
well, that's
cable
right.
in general. So it's unfair to go, oh, ESPN are losing all these subscribers. Is there something wrong with ESPN? Actually, no. ESPN are losing all these subscribers because people are in general cord-cutting.
Well, that's it.
That's my theory.
And that's, you know, I think it was Scott Van Pelt did an art, like he appeared in some article or interview and basically said, well, you know, every time somebody wants to write an article about cord-cutting, it's like, oh, people want to drop their cable. Oh, and look what it's doing to ESPN. It just
makes
convenient
sort of
sidebacks.
They're sort of a whipping.
And there's definitely people who are dropping it. But the funny thing is, like, when it comes to subscriber fees, you know, it's not like when you – I mean, there is sports packages on your cable, but it's usually the first thing people buy. And so when you're dropping it, it isn't like people are dropping ESPN and keeping
only
the rest of the cable. Yeah, you're dropping everything
else. If you're dropping ESPN, you're dropping your sports package, which means Outdoor Network and all that other stuff is going out the window too. But you're right. ESPN's the big ball on the block.
But the big difference for them is – as it currently stands, their subscriber, I don't know if it's an average or a fixed amount, but they get $7.21 per person who gets ESPN per month.
Oh, wow.
So, like, it's by far the biggest. Like, CNN is 99 cents or something, like, less than that. And a lot of cable channels don't get paid anything for getting it. Like, the cable company says, well, you want to give us stuff?
We're not paying you to put your stuff on.
You should be happy that you're allowed to participate. So, they are by far the biggest dollars. Now, that... that price per subscriber at the same time as 10 million subscribers has gone down, has gone from $5 and change to $7 and change. Like, so they've raised it up there and they seem to be able to. It's nobody's turning them down. They that's the one thing is, you know, people know that people want to get sports generally, although we'll talk about how they want to get their sports. They want to get sports generally. And so overall, this hasn't really changed their revenue picture.
Because there were a lot of theories running around.
There's reductions, but like I forget. Like they said in Disney. Because
ESPN
ESPN's part of Disney. ESPN's part of an ABC network. ABC network was picked up by Disney in, I think, the mid-90s. ESPN makes more profit than all of the other Disney properties combined.
Yeah.
Which I was pretty surprised. Okay, I knew they made a bunch of money, but like you're talking about Disney. I mean, like Disney's got the movies, got the places, all that sort of stuff. But
it is quite amazing. Listen,
$7.21 per person, you know, who's got cable, that's a lot of money every month coming in there. I mean, like
that's true,
you complain about paying $9 for Netflix each month.
Well, I was about to say, that's the cost of going to the cinema once a month. And basically, if nearly everyone in America went to the cinema once a month, Disney would be really, really happy. But everyone in America doesn't go to the cinema once a month. So by conversely, it is not a surprise that ESPN is a big ticket item for them.
Yeah. So when you look at it, it's not like a company that's laying off people because they're having trouble. If anything, people are like, geez, they're really like almost panicking. But this is the great mystery, and I won't be the first person to talk about it, is that what this really might be is realizing that people don't want that stuff anymore. Like, you know, like what they, you know, the, you know, this guy, Kevin Draper, he does talk about the fact that, you know, they're adapting to a world in which, I have the wrong article in front of me, sorry, but it basically is saying how, you know, what's the point of Sports Center anymore? You know, like when we were all a bit younger, we weren't kids, but we're not of intermittent middle age. You sat down and you watched Sports Center every night to get all your information.
You needed your news and you needed
your
highlights.
Well, now your phone tells you all your scores, tells you all your highlights. You know, you can get this stuff off of YouTube, Twitter, all that. So what's the point of the Sports Center broadcast? And part of this may be SportsCenter is one example, but they've got lots of other things where they've been creating more and more presentations, and they may be going, what's the point? Our strength is the content, our contracts with these places. We don't need to pay a bunch of people to be out there fronting this like they're newscasters because, I mean...
That's what I'm saying. I don't, obviously, canon all these people, it's not going to... Really, what it saves them is a drop in the ocean. But I think what it was as much an internal message as anything else. What it was saying was, look, we have to change how we do business here, and we don't need all these personalities just talking about sports. We just need people to front the live sports. Right. And so,
they're not going the whole way there, but that's what they're sort of signaling. And some of the articles said that maybe they're signaling that to Disney because Disney is their boss.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying,
hey, listen, we know what there's.
I don't believe the layoffs of all these people who work in front of the camera is a signal that somehow they're hurting financially. Right. It's a signal that we need to change. We're going to slightly change how this division operates. And again, everyone was saying, well, it's because they paid too much money for live sports. I understand that the amount of money they've paid for live sports is huge.
Yeah.
And like I say, it is. If you listen to this show in England or in Europe, you know how much the rights fees for soccer has changed the way the sport exists in your country. It's the same reason the FA Cup is now not as important anymore because there's not as much money in it. But my point is you need to pay that for live sports. Otherwise, you don't have a channel.
Right.
People aren't going to, you know, again, it's interesting. Cable news has almost gone the other way. Cable news has to fill its time with talking heads because it can't control when exciting things are going to happen. But the minute something happens, all those talking heads, their shows get bumped and we're just at the earthquake or the war that's breaking out, whatever it is. And so that's why it is slightly different for ESPN. They have a fixed timetable so they can sort of make those decisions creatively.
Yeah. So one of the things that, and one of the areas when the article that talked about them losing a bunch of money is that back in August of last year, they actually bought a 33% stake and an option to acquire majority ownership of a company called BAM Tech, B-A-M, capitalized T-E-C, Tech, a spinoff of MLB, Major League Baseball's Advanced Media. So BAM Tech is what you know, Major League Baseball has its own like apps and online stuff for watching. You can watch all kinds of like old games, new games.
Oh, really?
Pick all, you know, you pay a subscription fee for all that. And some of the highlights they'll put out regularly, but it is considered one of the best versions of an online telephone delivery of content for a sports league around there. So interestingly enough, here ESPN is basically setting itself up to potentially take control of it. It already provides the back end for streaming platforms: Watch ESPN, HBO Go, the WWE Network, which you know, that's wrestling, you know, pro wrestling, which they bit a big push into online thing. MLB TV, of course. It's basically, they're saying, like, the line in here is the most sophisticated internet streaming company this side of Netflix and YouTube. So here they are. They're saying, like, if you look at those two things together, this may be the smartest thing in the world. Like, they may be looking at this stuff and going, like, listen, people are not going to sit down in front of their TV and not paying these people. What they're going to pay for is instant demand of what they want to see right then. And if we can set the things up, that's where we're going to make it.
The layoffs were a big deal, and the narrative was anytime any company lays people off, the narrative is they're in trouble, they're hurting. Yet in a strange way, the layoffs actually are not. It's just the price of setting themselves up for something bigger down the line. I mean, really. And it's interesting because there's been a lot of various opinions in the tradition of sports, hot takes, who have said that ESPN were in trouble because they'd become too liberal or they were showing too much
Caitlyn Jenner. Yeah, a bunch of things they're talking about.
All kinds of stuff. But ultimately, you know, it makes me laugh because at the end of the day, to these media companies, the only thing that matters is the bottom line, and they just needed to free up some capital to go in a different direction.
It's certainly possible that some viewer says, hey, sure, I'm not going to watch it because this announcer is liberal, but they're still watching their Yankees game if the Yankees game
and,
is on.
And here's the, and in a strange way, in terms of all the media outlets that they've just bought that they are accessing there, it doesn't matter if Joe Blow isn't watching my show anymore. Again, I remember one time with our good friend Spike Guest Cameron, I called in and complained about the X Games the first year it was on. They didn't care. They're still showing the X Games now. I called up the switchboard and gave them a heap of abuse. Why am I watching people on skateboards? Where's the baseball game? Yeah, they didn't care.
They didn't listen.
Yeah, so.
Well, so, and then the next part of that I wondered and want to think what you thought was, okay, where is this actually really going to go? Because it's always fun to sort of put your hat on and say, where is it going to go? Like, what, 20 years from now, how are we consuming our sports? And it's easy to say, oh, more online and stuff like that. But I tell you what, their website, ESPN changed their website around like a year and a half ago. It's horrible.
It's not very good, is it?
And there's, like, it's so hard to, like, find actual content.
And all these stupid 2-minute bits come on.
Exactly. It's all this tiny stuff. Yeah, all this auto roll of video. Like, and they changed their ESPN FC, which I think they're using as sort of a test case. Like ESPN FC being their soccer-based website is almost totally separate from everything.
Yes.
And it's just got
because they inherited it. They bought that from someone else.
Oh, but they inherited soccer. It's got that set of grids.
Yeah. It looks like a blog.
Like it's all, and every article is like nothing really. There's no analysis. It's just like, oh, you know, people are upset at Coach Jose Mourinho, you know,
well,
and, or like he's making a big deal. And they're all like they're sound bites, which I'm assuming is because they figure that's what people want to see.
Well, actually, what they do is they actually enlist a lot of people who already have blogs, and they co-opt them to write for soccer. For example,
that's crazy. But the blogs,
you're basically getting a blogger. You're not getting a reporter who's been in the training.
But I would think
ground.
A blogger to be almost a little better. Like they would write maybe some unusual analysis, but instead it's just this tiny stuff. And so I do wonder. I mean, your bread and butter is always going to be your big sporting event, but if basically you're going to take everything else and chop it up into little itty bitty bites that don't really carry any information, what do I care? I mean, I'm not into that anymore. And I was trying to think of an analogous structure business wise. And it's the only thing I could come up with is the news, right? Like, so the news, people have been migrating away from newspapers towards Huffington Post
and
all these other things with like end or like the comedy show. Like people don't watch you know, the 6 o'clock news on a network.
No, they watch Daily Show.
But they watch Daily Show, you know, or used to watch
or
Daily
whatever
Show.
They watch.
You know, now it's Colbert and Seth Meyers and things like that. And I'm like, well, does that work? Because I don't think that part works for sports, but easily you could see the sports themselves being boiled down to little, you know, smaller bites. And I would miss that. I mean, like there's a there's a valuable place for long form analysis of some sports. You know, I don't know. Even the when you go to the UK papers to get articles about the soccer, there isn't really that much there, at least that I can find. I mean, maybe I'm just not finding the right stuff. But somebody who sat down and wrote a, you know.
Well, I think it depends.
A thousand words.
It does depend where you go.
The things. Yeah.
I mean, I think it can be found. It's interesting. I do think at a certain level, though, sports like the movies, it can only get boiled down so far. And while you can have different methods of accessing it, at the end of the day, that doesn't change the product that you're looking to access.
Yeah.
We're not going back to when I was a kid. Where there was only one live game right. a year, and the rest of it was highlights. That's the difference.
Now and that part's good.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to our. We're going to veer away from sports, but we're going to stay with Walt Disney. We're going to do the Star Wars thing.
Yeah, Star Wars.
So while my partner fiddles around with the technology, obviously, if you listen to our two-part Spring Special, which was first albums, we both ended with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which we said was one of the greatest albums of all time.
Usually you would hold that out on somebody because you would say you have to listen to it to find that out. But now people know. Maybe if you want to hear some Sgt. Pepper's copyright infringement, you can just go ahead and listen to that.
Listen podcast. To the show and listen to what we have to say about it because we do come here from different angles.
Commentary, so it's not a copyright violation.
Anyway,
fair use, you know.
Anyway, and I'm now linking it back to Disney, and I'm actually going to link all these things back to the FA Cup final because this is our FA Cup final special. I found something on the internet this week. Some Star Wars fans out there. So Star Wars, there's your Disney product. They have.
I think they're British too, aren't they?
I don't know. I just started listening to it. What they've done is they've taken the songs from Sgt. Pepper's and changed the lyrics.
Their handle is Palette Swap Ninja.
Yeah,
like a color palette hyphen swap. I don't have any idea what that name comes from.
I guess what I'm going to describe here is they play the songs of Sgt. Pepper, but they've changed the lyrics to describe Star Wars or an edited version of Star Wars as you watch it.
Yeah, I mean, like,
so it's in order.
It's first of all, each song is full length. It's not like here's a short snippet of the song. It's the full album basically redone. They redo the music too, which I'm sure was about whether they'd be allowed to or not. And then all of the lyrics are changed to tell the story of Star Wars in the order it occurs in Star Wars. So I read something. Apparently they worked on this thing for years to get it to this point. But let's throw a clip on. I got the wrong slider.
Sorry, yeah. So that sounds familiar, obviously. This is the start of Sgt. Pepper's. And if you watch this online...
It's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. Now, can you just turn that down for a minute quickly? So he's singing, and you're watching the scroll from the start of Star Wars. So just to give you at home a sense of what's going on here, you're watching Star Wars, he's singing. And so now we're looking at a planet and there's spaceships and stuff.
They tease Star Wars a couple of times within it. And so they've cut, obviously it's not the full-length movie because it's only about a 30 minute.
About an hour, yeah. I can't get enough of it. It's so stupid, but it's really, really clever.
Yeah. Now, some parts, you know, just like the albums, it's not every line is a brand new. Let's see.
We're going to put the link on the blog and give you a chance to look at it.
So it's it's broken up into it's like a playlist. So the whole, each one, and it automatically scrolls.
Why don't you find another song while I say something? We don't know anything about these guys. The production value is definitely of karaoke value. So what I mean is that's probably how they did it. They probably got a karaoke machine and then they'd obviously rewritten the lyrics. And again, the lyrics all make sense. It's not just people sort of throwing out words to do with Star Wars. When you watch the video that they've selected from the film, the lyrics make perfect sense. There'll be, you know, there was the line there, the Empire's trying to kill us, and it's a picture of the big starship firing at the little ship that Princess Leia's on. So the words and the pictures go together. It, to me, my guess is they probably got a karaoke machine, because I don't think they, yeah. I don't think it was Seven Magicians. They got some sort of a karaoke machine or karaoke version of it, and then went ahead and sung their own lyrics onto mm-hmm. it. So this is when I'm 64. Right. Can you say what scene we're watching from Star Wars?
Well, they're getting sent to free her from the prison, and it's Unit AA-23. Oh.
Dress up like some stormtroopers too. Check the computer, Leia is here. We should set her free. Despite Han's objection, let's head to detention. AA-23.
And I don't want to overplay this, but the lyrics hang together as songs. That's my point. It's not just like trying to desperately wedge in bits of the plot.
Yeah.
You know, that song
that's what I mean. Like, you know, I saw something that said it took a long time. And you can understand why. If, like, literally each time you came up to a sentence, like, okay, we need a sentence about this part right now that's going on in the movie. And, like, how do we describe this?
I want to say something to you. And let me actually quickly tie it into the FA Cup.
Okay. Well, you have to.
Well, I mean,
you really only tied it into Disney, which is ESPN, but you didn't.
No, but I'm just going to... But again, and in the spirit of all these old FA Cup... I mean,
you bragged a lot about the tie-ins to the FA Cup.
Because a lot of these old FA Cup final specials, at some moment it was just the regular episode of the show, and the link to the FA Cup final was extremely throwaway. This moment in the show, the link to the FA Cup final is extremely throwaway. Okay. Sgt. Pepper's came out in 1967. That was the same year that Tottenham Hotspur beat your beloved Chelsea 2-1 in the FA Cup final.
Well...
So there you go, and then of course,
and they're in pursuit as we speak.
Yes, and in 1977, which was when Star Wars came out, that was the year of the Queen's Silver Jubilee, and she was actually in attendance at the FA Cup final of 1977 when Manchester United beat Liverpool, and she actually presented the trophy. Here's the other thing about the FA Cup final: most years there is supposed to be the Football Association has a royal patron. At the moment, it's Prince William.
Mm-hmm.
He will probably go to the game and present the trophy. Okay. So it's very similar to Wimbledon, where there's always someone in the royal box. Mm-hmm. 1977 is one of the few years. The Queen herself doesn't do all these sort of things. She goes to the horse races because that's her thing.
Well, she jumped out of the plane in the Olympics, didn't she?
there you go. But in 1977, because it was her silver jubilee and she was busy touring the country and celebrating herself for having been in for 25 years.
It was a jubilee of power or birthday?
It was silver jubilee, so it was 25 years as queen.
Okay.
So she was so it wasn't happy birthday to me. It was I'm in charge for a quarter of a century.
Wasn't her birthday just like last year or the year before?
Well, she has a birthday every year.
No.
Everyone's got a birthday every year.
That's true. Good point. Fair enough. You got me on that one. But wasn't it like a big round number and it got a celebration? Wasn't it called a jubilee too?
Yeah. I mean, jubilees come at certain numbers, but 25 is obviously quite a big one. Little did I know she'd still be getting jubilees now. But anyway.
The next time I have a party, I'm going to call it a jubilee. I mean, it just sounds so much more exciting.
So anyway, silver, because silver is 25. Mm-hmm. 77 was the year of the Silver Jubilee. She was actually at Wembley, and when Manchester United won the cup, they went up the steps to receive the FA Cup. It was presented to them by the Queen. And of course, that's the same year that Star Wars came out.
So that was 77, so now we're in year...
Let me tell you something for free. I bet your boy J.J. Abrahams doesn't know who won the FA Cup in 1977. I bet you didn't know who won it 2 years ago when Star Wars came out.
No, probably not.
That was us.
Yeah.
4-0.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... So there's so to go back, I must say, and part of it is, and again, I don't want to spoil our own special. If you haven't listened to the special, there is something about Sgt. Pepper's where it's a home run. They could have picked all kinds of other albums, but it wouldn't have the same effect because we all know the songs on Sgt. Pepper's. Yeah. So, but again...
I mean, listen, we listened to it 2 seconds beforehand, and I found myself singing Princess Leia's Death Star plans on the way down the stair here.
And again, I tend to be naturally slightly cynical or... Who's the guy who used to do all the parodies? Al something. He had a big frizzy hair.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Weird Al Yankovic. Those things have a sort of a very singular, oh, that's clever for me, and I laugh, but then I'm done with it.
Yeah.
This, I'm like, I don't know.
This is like a parody orchestra or a orchestra
parody. Yes, it's a parody concept. It's a parody concept album. I don't know. So I don't know. We'll put a link on the blog.
Of course, yeah.
Within the article.
This is unlike our YouTube stuff. This is very easy. All you gotta do is Princess Leia's Death Star plans, and you'll get to it immediately.
How many views have they had already? What does it say there on their YouTube page? What does it say? How many times has this thing been watched?
Where did they put that? It says 31,000 views on this one.
That's not that popular.
But the thing is, it's broken up into episodes.
But you know something?
With
our boost, they're going to be flying. Through the roof. So we're going to give them a shout out. So anyway, there you go. That's Star Wars Sergeant. What do they call it again? What do they call it?
Princess Leia's Stolen Death Star Plans.
No, that's that song, but what do they call the whole thing?
That's it, because the album is Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Heart.
Oh, of course,
name it the same
Princess,
way.
Princess Leia's Stolen Death. I'm going to keep singing it all the time now.
So
anyway, on with the show, our FA Cup final special. You sent me an article the other week, courtesy of our New Hampshire correspondent.
Yep.
He sent us an article.
He's got a new title.
Oh. What, the title that we're giving him, or in real life?
In real life, but it's perfect for the podcast.
Okay.
It's like, I apologize. It's not chief scientist, it's...
Lead scientist?
It's more like his new thing is, he gets almost like freelance science, you know? And so I was like, oh, you're going to be the science...
Expert, consultant, troubleshooter, science agent.
It was an unusual, like not horribly unusual, but just unusual enough, and just said, I'll find out next
Lord
time.
Scientist.
Apologies to scientist of the pod. We'll get that.
We'll give you your promotion later.
Yeah.
So, scientist of the pod, he sent in this article from Science Daily that said 33% of seafood sold in 6 DC eateries was mislabeled.
Yeah, and I think it ended up getting some play in the Post as well.
Obviously, this show emanating from the DC area, it was slightly disturbing. No, disturbing is that it was both disturbing and unsurprising.
I will say this is a classic case of the actual facts not being quite as dramatic as that sounds. So, like the theory, okay, what it is they go to, I think they went to 10 seafood restaurants around DC, but higher end seafood restaurants, and they would take home a little bit of the fish that they were eating, and then they would go check the genetics and see if it really was the fish that they said it was. Was it really this type of tuna? Was it really this type of shrimp or things like that? And 33% of the 10, which I guess means 3 of them, it was not the same type of fish.
No, in this one it said an unsuspecting diner is sold an expensive tuna that is actually a completely different species of fish, often one that is much cheaper or on the endangered species list.
Right. But what they ultimately say, so like kind of interesting, and you know, when they do this, you can't necessarily even blame the restaurants because they buy the seafood.
They buy what are being sold.
They get a stack of tuna steaks.
Yeah.
They can't necessarily tell, like, oh, it's a slightly different type of tuna than I'm advertising. And, like, the shrimp was, like, instead of being some sort of rock shrimp, it was some other type of more cheaply made farm-raised shrimp. Well, I'm sure they got it in a big bag of this stuff.
And here's the thing that it wasn't. You ever been to the salad bar in your supermarket and they have that crab product that they make? The point of this article wasn't that you were getting sold that.
Right. What they ultimately said, none of these were really egregious issues.
No.
So this is why, like, as an article, and I think it was GW University that did the study.
Because I'm now going to make two things right here. I'm going to make two claims.
Six restaurants, 10 dishes, I guess. Something like that. I don't know. Six restaurants, and they come up with 33% being mislabeled.
Anyway, these guys had taken they'd taken the items on the menu. They'd taken a stamp, they'd sort of cut off a sample, stuck in a test tube, and then gone and tested the test tube of their sample later on to actually identify what sort of fish it was. Yeah. I'm going to make two statements about this story. One, you can get most people in a room and tell them that they're having one sort of fish, and very few of them are going to go, ooh, it doesn't taste like that. It tastes like another sort. People don't know with fish.
Yeah. Well, plus you put a bunch of things on it.
Yeah, you know, people don't know. And the other thing that was more... I guess both worrisome and like, yeah, whatever, when I read the article was, I think this goes on all the time in all kinds of restaurants with all kinds of products. I'm sure there's all, I mean, let's face it, you eat out a lot, you go to your local, oh, so-and-so is organic, what do they call it, farm to table. Yep, we don't know.
There was an article in the Post this week about organic milk. And
yeah, I don't know.
Like, there are actual standards, like the FDA, not used to be, you could just claim it, whatever it is.
But doesn't know. That's my point. You put most people in and tell them, oh, this was, with fish, this was farm-raised or whatever, or this, that, and the other.
Probably. I mean, like, listen, no, I mean, you would know the difference between wild salmon and farm-raised salmon, right?
No.
Okay. You could definitely, if you eat them side by side, you'll totally know the difference. Like
but I'm not, though. That's my point.
Well, I mean, once you think about it, you'll know. Like, a farm-raised salmon is this plumper, lighter pink, and wild salmon's like a much darker type of thing.
I want to give a shout-out to journalist
Paul. I made some smoked salmon last week
in my smoker.
So I'm keeping my thing. And that was wild salmon.
Maybe we can eat something you smoked during the game.
Although, great fan of the pod, who I won't name, who I was eating this with, did not actually, I had made smoked burgers and smoked chicken and smoked salmon all at the same time, and he didn't sample the smoked salmon. I'm a little bit offended.
Oh, all right. Well, you know who you are. I want to give a shout out to journalist Paul Greenberg. I saw a show that he was done on Frontline on PBS about a month ago. It was called Fish on My Plate, and what he'd done was he explains at the start he's written a couple of books about fishing and the sea. So that is part of who he is. He likes to fish. And what he was doing, he was embarking on, he'd been reading about the health benefits of fish. And he embarked on a year where the only protein that he ate was fish. Spoiler, at the end of the year, that really hasn't changed 2 years, which he was disappointed to discover. He expected to have found some whole new sort of level of health from eating fish and not other things. But also what he did was he spent a year traveling around the world and really examining how fish are either caught or farmed, and it was really interesting. And so you talked about, you know, farm wild salmon and farm salmon, and you're right. I probably could tell the difference if they're put side to side, but I don't get to eat my fish side to side. And so, yeah, the article was interesting, and also it was interesting and unsurprising to me, because, like I say, I have an opinion that I think a lot of this goes on. I think, you know, yeah, I can go to an expensive steakhouse and order New York Strip, and all I know is this is really great. But do I really? Do you know what I mean?
Well, at least for the steak, for the different cuts, you know, you can kind of tell what
that
is.
Yeah, I just feel like eating out now has become, and again, I don't want to put the boot into the organic food people, but, you know, if you put a label on something, it differentiates you rather than we do the best hot dog. Do you know what I mean? It's like it seems to be a current trend within eating that if I can, rather than trying to make out that my pizza is better than yours because it tastes better, my pizza is better than yours because it's organic or it's... Do you know what I mean? It seems to be this sort of funny thing right now. And I think, you know, again, when I read the article, you know, they were talking about how, you know, one thing was labeled as chili and sea bass and something else was something else. And I'm reading it going, yeah, I wouldn't know the difference. It's all fish. You know, well, I mean, I'm not being thrown.
You would know a difference in this case because they were close enough. But
I'm
going to
challenge our listeners out there. You don't know one bit of chicken from another.
Well, yeah, because they're all chicken.
But that's my point.
But you know, you'd know the difference between trout and tuna, and you know the difference.
Okay, you know. Yeah, maybe. So how does this tie into the FA Cup final?
I don't know.
Well, I went online and I looked to see what you can currently buy at Wembley Stadium.
Oh.
You can get, obviously, draft beer. They have something
but not in their seats, keep in mind. All you Americans, like, this is the big, big difference here.
You can't drink in view of the pitch.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
This is a throwback to the days of hooliganism.
So I couldn't tell. Well, and the nice thing is it's not that long. Like, look, listen, the game is 2 hours overall. The halves are 45 minutes. So you can have a beer beforehand during halftime and not really, it's not like a 5 hour baseball game where you really kind of gotta have more access than briefly. It's a long time to spend there
because you're going to be well out of it if you're hammering back a beer between innings.
So two
you're gonna be well out
two
of
beer
it.
Stories before you get back to the food thing. I may have told this story already. I mean, you remember during when we went to the Olympics,
because we're going to finish talking about going to Wembley.
Should I save that? I was going to make a beer story. Okay, so we were there. Anyway, we tell the rest of the story later. But when I went out during halftime to get the games, the beer vendors, they were all women, I remember, had they must have had 50, 60 cups of beer all pre-poured.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm sure at a regular Premier League or cup match is what they got to do to make sure they can serve it all.
Get them in and out.
So we knew. We went out there to get our beers. And because it was the Olympics, you know, it's all family. People aren't really thinking about it as a big drinking event. And, like, the woman was like...
Well, plus, no one is thinking of going on a hooligan rampage when my country doesn't win a bronze medal. Yeah,
The woman's like, is it halftime? Are people coming out? And we're like, yeah, they're going to come out, but I don't think they're going to come out in the quantities that you're accustomed to in some other matches. I also noticed during one of the semifinals, it might have been Arsenal semifinal. I think it was I don't know if Wembley is like notoriously bad for serving beer at halftime because there's so many people.
There were loads of empty seats.
But there were tons of empty seats at the end of the first half, which I'm sure was everybody.
You watch any, but it's funny. If you watch any Premier League game at the weekend and you watch the first 5 minutes of the second half, the stands always look slightly.
Well, that part is like getting back in. That part I understand. But the leaving early during the first half.
To
get to the beer in the first place, I think, was what was going on there.
Well, I mean, if you're an Arsenal fan, the view is better well away from the pitch at the moment. Let me run through some of the things you can get at Wembley. Obviously, you can get beer, but you can get hot dogs, fish and chips. And according to this...
Are those hot dogs organic?
It does not say. It does not fish and chips, and also red lentil falafel and kids' meals. There you go.
The kids' meals are like... It doesn't say what's in them?
No. Just kids. You can get fish and chips, and then there's fish and chips, the fish and chips, and then it says fish and chips, comma, red lentil falafel and kids' meals, comma, all freshly prepared back of house. And again, like our seafood, I don't know if it's prepared back of house or not.
And I wouldn't know the difference between a red lentil and a non-red lentil, except for maybe it would be red.
Wick's Manor sausages, which were... they were Britain's best sausage in 2013. That comes directly from Wick's Manor.
In 2014 or 15 or 16?
I guess someone else won it.
But, why aren't they there?
Well, no, because Wembley obviously has a concession with Wick's Manor. Chicken and chips. The chicken is southern coated chicken and chips. Chips being French fries for beef. Burgers and chips. British beef burgers.
I think the chicken chips has probably just got to be one of those chicken tinder plates. Does it have a picture there? It can't be fried.
No.
It's not like bone in. It's got to be like...
it's like a chicken tender. But again, you know, it is what it is. There's no mention of Cornish pasties, which we ate a lot of when we went to the Olympics. I like Cornish pasties. Anyway, we went... So that's what you can get at Wembley right now. If you decide...
Does it say what brand of beer? Because I know all the stadiums seem to have very exclusive concessions with one particular brewer, or at least the team stadiums.
I couldn't download any of the alcohol information. I was on a work computer at the time.
Like that's ever stopped you.
We went... So anyway, the FA... To sort of bring it back full circle, the FA Cup final is played every year at Wembley. We went to Wembley...
During the Olympics.
We saw an Olympic... I think it was a knockout. No, I think it was a group game.
Yeah.
I think it was Ghana and South Korea, if I remember correctly. We had pretty decent seats at Wembley. We were behind one goal on what was the equivalent of the club level. Yeah. I mean, it was...
I remember when we went there, you know, not all the Olympic events were packed. I mean, they were pretty... I guess they were mostly full.
Some of them were,
But there was some thought, like, it was a... South Korea and Nigeria? Was an African
Did I
nation.
Say I said Ghana, but maybe it was Nigeria.
Maybe it was Ghana. Okay. Did you just say that? Sorry.
Yeah.
That's how much I listen. but we really thought, you know, I don't think this is going to be full.
Now, like, Wembley holds like 87,000.
Yeah, it's a big place.
It's massive.
And it was full.
It was
full. Packed. And like, just think of nothing else. There's just a lot of games, you know, for the Olympics. Yeah. And there are a lot of them that were there at Wembley.
Yeah.
And so I thought, they're going to fill this thing with 90,000 people like 10 times? How the heck are they going to do that? And it was full.
They did. New Wembley, and again...
It was a nightmare getting there off the tube and all of everything there.
Well, it's not so hard to get to Wembley.
Yeah, she was getting out.
Actually, leaving is a nightmare. There seems to be only one station within 3 miles of the stadium, and 90,000 people all trying to get back onto two platforms.
Especially the Olympics when nobody really knew anything. It's one thing if people have gone there a bunch of times and they know where to go, but we were just, you know, wandering around in circles half the time.
New Wembley is a very modern, you know, it's got luxury boxes and different levels and massive screens. I remember going to the old Wembley when I was a kid, and old Wembley was a dump. It actually used to, it was interesting because it had the field, and the field was surrounded by one of those small, not a full running track. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like some of those European stadiums, especially in Germany. But it had like a cinder track that for the longest time on a weeknight to make money, they'd have greyhound racing.
Oh, yeah.
So it was one of those dirt tracks. Wembley was massive, and obviously, you know, growing up in England all those years ago, seating for half the people. So if you were standing behind the goal, you were standing.
Okay, I was about to ask.
You were just standing on a step. Yeah. It was a bit of a dump. The toilets were terrible. Yeah, it was interesting to play. And I think I mentioned earlier in the show, I mentioned Augusta National.
Was capacity about the same? Or was it
about the same? It was about 100,000, okay. Yeah. I mentioned Augusta National, and I know we're now comparing different sports, and Wimbledon, where they played the tennis. These are all iconic sports places. When you see them on TV, when you go to Augusta, they say, oh, yeah, everyone's called a patron, and you have pimento cheese sandwiches, and they look a certain way, and that is how they are in real life. You grew up, when I was a kid, you grew up thinking Wembley was this mystical place. Shrine. And then you get there, and it's a dump. And strangely now, new Wembley is really, really nice. But the fact that when we went to the Olympics, it took us like 3 hours to go 5 miles back across it's London home.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it's still a dump. I'm sorry. I mean, it's interesting. But yeah, it's interesting to sort of to bring where we started. If you say to someone of a certain age, yeah, Wembley, all those details don't matter because it's strange. It signifies something. It signifies you are playing, we're going to Wembley. Like the teams all have song. Every team has different songs that reference we're going to Wembley. Right. Because going to Wembley means something.
And they always say Wembley.
Wembley, yeah. We're the famous Arsenal and we're going to Wembley. Sorry. But what I mean is it's symbolic of, yeah, we're going to Wembley. We're playing in the showcase game that everyone else is going to be watching, and it finishes the season. And so all these different things. Wembley isn't a place, it's a status.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this year, Arsenal and Chelsea are playing at Wembley in the FA Cup final. And while the game itself and the tournament is not as important as it was, although it's interesting, I'm going to say this. We did talk about this at the start of the show. We did compare it ever so slightly to the NCAA tournament. If you're here in America and you love that competition because it's, you know, a number one losing to a number one might lose to a number 12, and, you know, there's that sort of knockout, everyone's moment ends. The FA Cup is that. I always say, of all the things I see, and again, I don't, you know, yes, sure, tennis tournaments are always that way, but in team sports, I would say that, you know, I've often tried to explain the NCAA tournament to my friends back in the UK, and I've always said, imagine the FA Cup played on four consecutive weekends. And they go, oh, okay, I know what you're getting at. You know, where each round you are closer to the end and each game feels bigger and all that kind of thing. So anyway, like I say, this is, well, I guess we're at the end. Do we want to say anything about that? Do you want to make a prediction for the game? We're both sitting here in our shirts.
And you ducked and
I'm ready now. I'm going to post a picture of us in our shirts so you will know that we did this show dressed in our fan attire.
Mm-hmm.
And I was funny because I was listening to our last show from a couple of weeks ago where we decided you were talking about full kit wankers. You will see from these pictures that we are not full kit wankers. We are only wearing our shirts. Okay, I'm going to make a prediction. I think I referenced the first ever FA Cup that I remember Arsenal playing was in 1978 when they lost. I was too young. I was alive when they won it in 71, but I was too young and was not yet a fan. I remember them losing in 78 and crying. I'm better about my defeats now as an adult. Plus, I've already shed too many tears about this year's Arsenal team. We're going to be the underdog, but I suspect the underdog will not have its day. I cannot believe I'm saying that. Although I'm going to say this. I'm going to be positive because I can never say that we're not going to win. I think it's going to be a miserable game. It's going to be 0-0, and we're going to win on penalties.
All right.
And I will leap up in town like it's the greatest achievement in the world.
Well, I'm going to go with Chelsea 2-1. Nice and simple.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. It probably won't be a very good game, though.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know. So much of this show has been this sort of fake nostalgia trip. your memories of the FA Cup are always heightened, but at the end of the day, nine times out of ten, finals tend to suck.
Yeah, well, the Chelsea-Tottenham game in the prior round was fantastic, in the
semi-final.
Yeah.
Well, a journalist once made a point that semi-finals were better games because teams were playing for. You were playing to still to get there, somewhere. Yeah. But a final, everyone suddenly gets really, really cautious and you don't want to lose. And it's true. How many years has the Super Bowl sucked? Yeah. This year's Super Bowl was really exciting. Yeah. The finals tend... when was the last good World Cup final?
Right.
I mean, you know, finals tend not to be good games. So, yeah, I'll go...
And when Chelsea plays tight, it means nothing's going to happen at all.
Well, we both...
Sit back there and counter... look for like one or two counters that, you know, Hazard can run the whole way and score or something, but that'll be about it.
So, in the tradition of those old FA Cup final specials where everyone would be excited about it, make sure you watch the game... We're going to go a little counterculture. We've both predicted, the game's going to suck.
Is that about it?
Yeah, so we'll be back in... You're going to play us out with some more... Yeah.
I was trying to find a Wembley song, but then I
couldn't We'll be back in a couple of weeks with part one of our two-part summer movie preview special.
Right, yeah.
It is the definitive place to... And I've noticed now, we will talk more about this, but all kinds of other websites now... run their summer movie previews. Yeah. We're the granddaddy of them all.
Yeah, exactly.
This has been The Atlantic Voice. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
Just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at atlanticvoice.net. Email us at atlanticvoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.